Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello. You're listening to BFN. This is the podcast about infertility, IVF, and the trials of trying for a baby. I'm Emma.
And I'm Gabby, and we're two card-carrying members of the Infertility Club. Hello. I think I got the intro wrong, didn't I? I said both instead of, I said two instead of both. It's been so long.
Oh, well, it has been so long. How long has it been? Many moons.
Yeah, too many moons.
Too many moons.
How are you, mate?
I've got COVID, so I'm not great.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty shit. We'll talk about that in a bit, shall we?
Sorry about that, mate.
How are you? You all right?
Hey, good.
Yeah?
It's my birthday, pretty much.
It's your birthday, pretty much. How was it? Did you have a good time?
I had a great time. My birthday yesterday. We just took a little half day off each. My husband and I went off and had some lunch. I you can kind of tell my age by the presents that I got from my husband.
What did you get?
Can you guess what one of them might have been?
You're looking at your nails a lot. Did you get a mani?
No.
What did you get?
He bought me Botox.
Oh my God, you actually got it.
And, you ready? Now, this was a surprise. Earwax cleaning at a special clinic.
Wow.
Both clinic-based presents.
What a romantic guy.
I was sitting there, I was like, oh my God, you couldn't, oh wow. I mean, yeah, that's my age.
So when are you going to go and get the Botox done, mate? This is a bit of a bomb that's been dropped.
Yeah, I don't know. And by the way, to anyone that's like, oh my God, I can't believe a husband would buy a wife Botox, that's awful. But I have been talking about it and dropping hints wildly for a long time. And I know the optics aren't great, but... yeah, it's very much, it was a longed for gift.
The optics will be great, pal.
Yeah, exactly. Optics
you
will
are
be great.
You are
very soon. Thank you. I just, do you know what? I got my fringe because I wanted to cover up my wrinkly forehead, and I want to grow the fringe out. It's a pain in the bum. So I'm like, well, I guess it's Botox then.
Mate, I am deeply impressed, and I can't wait to see the results before I copy you.
Well, I figure we're all, you know, well-versed in needles. I'm not scared. So...
quite a way. And this podcast is changing. It's now...
exactly.
Gabby's plastic surgery podcast. What are you going to get done next?
You are welcome, everybody. Yeah. That's me. That's me.
Okay, well, what's happened since we've been off, mate? Like, I'm just trying to think...
fucking lots. The whole abortion thing in the States is the biggest thing,
God.
I think, potentially.
I can't read about it without wanting to cry.
Yeah, it's very anger making, isn't it? It's horrific.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've talked, or certainly I've talked about, like, how I went through my very short pro-life stage during my infertility and then was kind of jogged out of it. And I'm now very strongly pro-choice. But, you know, the effect that potentially is going to have on IVF.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say the implications for us and our community are huge.
So one of our friends has done some really good research into this and kind of is helping people to understand the implications for them if they're going through IVF or if they are planning to go through IVF. Arielle Spiegel is her Instagram is literally Arielle Spiegel, but she runs a website called Co-Fertility.
Yeah.
If you just look up Co-Fertility.
If you're US based anyway, she's a great person to follow because she does loads of like myth busting and like, you know, talks about grants and like her website's a good explainer site. Mm. She's really lovely. I met her in New York a few years ago, which I'm very excited about.
Yeah,
any opportunity to mention that one trip to New York I had?
I think once we kind of understand a bit more of what, I mean, once anyone understands more of what the implications are, then we'll probably do a show on it.
Yeah, I think it deserves a lot more time than we probably have in this episode. So I would suggest we will do a longer talk about it sometime soon.
Yeah. In the meantime, we have got a very special guest today.
We do.
Who are we talking to, Gabs?
Emma B.
Emma B. It's Emma Barnett, you guys, the host of Woman's Hour. So excited to talk to her. Most of you will have read the piece that she wrote in the Times a few months ago now about her struggles to conceive her second child, doing rounds and rounds of IVF. So we spoke to her about that, about her endometriosis, about how she juggles like an incredibly high profile career with IVF.
Yeah. She's always been a big champion, hasn't she? And spoken about her IVF in the past. She's very articulate on it. And it's, you know, she's, you know, going through IVF at the moment for her second child, which again is an angle that is unique, and she's very kind of thoughtful on it as well. I thought she was great to chat.
Yeah. And also, guess who's back? Back again.
Tim is back. Yeah, literally, I got him on Instagram this time. I was like, I've been emailing him, been not getting anything back. This time I was like, right, I'm stalking you on your Instagram, Tim. And he got back to me straight away. I was like, yes.
Yeah, and he's talking, actually, it's a bit of a theme this week, isn't it? He's talking about conceiving a second child.
Yes, a god. That was an accidental accidental twinning of content. Yeah, well, we did a shout out a couple of months ago about what questions you'd like to put to Tim, if and when he came back. Mm-hmm. And one of them was this kind of thing of like people doing IVF and then getting pregnant naturally straight away afterwards. And is it a thing? Is there a medical reason for it? You know, the way everyone kind of looks at you after you've had IVF going, oh, I bet you'll get pregnant naturally next time. Fuck off.
Yeah.
Is there any medical science behind that?
Yeah. And then I've got some news, which you'll find out in a minute.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, no shit. Hold on to your hats, babe.
But until then, I guess you can reach us on Instagram.
At Big Fat Negative.
You can reach us on Twitter.
At Big Fat Negative.
You can email us.
BigFatNegativePodcast@gmail.com.
And you can buy our book.
Big Fat Negative. Also, you can see what we're doing here.
Yeah.
We're not very creative.
We very much came up with one name and stuck with it. So for now, guys, and I'm very happy to be back and saying this, enjoy the show.
It's great to be back, guys. So, Emma, you've got some news, have you?
I think, well, it may or may not be news, really. But and for reasons I'll explain, or actually you guys all know, is that my body's a bastard. But yes, we have finally decided to try for a second. Hooray!
Yay!
Hooray!
And the crowd goes wild. Whoop!
It's been a process, a journey, deciding to go there. I spent a long time wondering if my head can go there again. Mm-hmm. As you and I talked about on the episode a while ago, I spent a long time wondering whether I would be able to, well, whether I would kind of not lose friends, but yeah, I guess lose friends a little bit. I'll have to distance myself from my friends again. I basically didn't know whether I wanted to go back into that headspace where I could end up incredibly sad and bitter again.
Yeah.
So that was quite a process. But the thing that kind of hammered it home to me was that I saw a guy that I know who just had twins by IVF. And he's got an older daughter as well. And he said to me, we have spent 7 years thinking about getting pregnant, trying to get pregnant, doing IVF, having our first, thinking about it again, wondering about it. Now we're never going to think about it again. And I was like, oh my God, that is an absolute dream.
Yeah, like that's certainly one way of looking at it.
Yeah, I mean, that is, I just never want to have to think about it again. So I was like, right, we're just going to do it. We're going to try and get it over with. I've got 3 embryos in the freezer. For me, an egg collection I don't want to do again. Yeah, so if these 3 embryos don't work, then that's it. And I'm done. Like, I am so lucky to have one already. Mm-hmm. Child, that is.
Mm-hmm. And lucky to have 3 embryos.
And lucky to have 3, exactly. So I think, you know, the number of people that we've spoken to who have been like, you've got to draw a line somewhere. So I've decided that my line is no more. No more stems, no more egg collections.
Yeah.
So I'm getting on in age.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm a bit older than you, so I'm like, maybe you're spring chicken. You're fine. No, I think that's a very sensible line to have. And I think if I were to jump off the fence, I'm currently sticking into my buttocks, I would be the same.
Yeah,
but I'm not there yet. So
also, stems are so fucking expensive. Like,
yeah,
my big difference, so the big difference between this time and last time, and I'm due to start my drugs in a couple of weeks, and then that will be straight into a frozen embryo transfer. But the big difference this time is obviously we're having to pay. You don't get it on the NHS for a second baby. The NHS has a one child policy.
Of course.
So, yeah, we've paid. The big difference for me is just the fact that I was able to get an appointment straight away. Like, I dropped them an email being like, oh, yeah, we're thinking about starting again. And they're like, okay, well, here are your 2 options. So you can either go in as like pay a bit less and you do, it's kind of the same. How do I explain it? It's the same kind of service that I got during my NHS round, which is mainly led by nurses.
Okay.
Or you can get kind of special, they call it personalized care, which is like consultant led. So you like pick your consultant and then you're just working with the consultant. Right. And like I, during my first round, saw the consultant once and that was pretty much me done. Maybe a couple of times actually. But it was mainly nurses that I was seeing.
Yeah.
Apart from like the big, big moments. This is going to be, I mean, the consultant like did a scan on me this time. So, yeah.
Was it a nicer scan?
I mean, it was the same kind of scan. It was identical. But yeah, we went for a consultant led and they were like, okay, well, she's got an appointment next Tuesday or Wednesday. She's got 3 on Thursday, or you can come in the next week. And I was like, oh mate, like I was expecting an 8-week wait.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I'm not actually ready to see her yet.
Yeah. I just wanted to get on the waiting list.
I have her direct line, I have her email address, I have her secretary's email address, I have her secretary's direct line.
Wow. Okay.
Do you remember like the hours I spent on hold last time?
Yeah, man.
Like days and weeks of my life that I spent on hold. I also now know all about the quality of my embryos.
Oh, interesting.
Because the last time they were like, they're all just like best quality. They're not all best quality. They're all like, I think the best one is a 5BB. Obviously, embryo quality is morphological. It's literally what they see down a microscope. It doesn't describe the quality of the DNA inside. So it's kind of, I did say to the consultant, like, what do you think of morphological quality? And she was like, I think it's bullshit.
Did you say morphological quality or did you say embryo grading?
No, I said that because I wanted her to know that I know all about this.
What you were talking about.
Yeah.
You wanted to scare her with your prowess.
I wanted to impress her and she was not impressed. Not even slightly. She's quite no nonsense. She was like,
okay. Yeah.
Like, not even like an eyebrow raised.
Sorry, and what was her answer?
She thinks it's bullshit.
Okay.
I don't think she said the words bullshit, but she went, oh,
she probably didn't say bullshit, no.
Yeah. But anyway, like that, I found that quite interesting. Like,
but I mean, that's what you tend to hear, isn't it? And it's why you don't often find out, is because you can have a embryo that's graded quite like really well that doesn't stink, yeah, and one that's graded what you in your head is really badly, and then that's the one that works. So
yeah. So my one, the only one of mine that didn't work, the only one of mine that was 5AA was the one that didn't work.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there you go.
So I suppose there you go. Yeah.
Take no heed of your gradings, guys.
Yeah. Exactly. But it's weird to have kind of all this information at my disposal, because obviously it kind of wanders across your mind at night.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
But I think the big difference for me is the fact that I already have a child.
For sure. Like,
I think that the physical sensation of having empty arms is not there.
Yeah.
It's not, yeah. It's not, I mean, you know, a lot of people go through secondary infertility and I'm in no way saying that it's not a thing. But for me, I guess I've had my expectations managed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know the possibility of this not working. I know that I can't have another child naturally. So for me, you know, the bar is fairly low, I guess. Mm. So I'm oddly blasé about the whole situation, which is a very weird sensation.
It's probably good, right?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm like forcing myself into this or if it's actually my authentic feelings.
Yeah, yeah.
But
and we'll never know.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if I get a positive test, I will not be blasé at that point. I will be over the moon.
And probably negative, you won't be blasé about that either.
Yeah, I'll probably be really sad. But like, my question is, will I be as sad as I was when I didn't have a child?
I mean,
weirdly, there's only one way to find out.
Yeah. I mean, you'd wager not, right?
Yeah, I don't think I could be. But that's, again, coming from my experience of primary infertility.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's like, it's hard to say this without being like, I'm not saying that secondary infertility isn't as hard. I'm just saying that I don't think I will find it as hard the second time around. And I guess it's because I'm very aware of my chances. Like, I think it's all about expectation management.
Yeah. Basically. Well, this is the thing. So secondary infertility is not the second time you've had infertility, is it? So
right. No.
The first time you have infertility, whether it's for your first child or your second, is going to be hard.
Yeah.
And so if you're going through secondary infertility, you've never been there before, you haven't experienced this before, of course it's going to be fucking heartbreaking and an awful experience. I suppose it's all, you know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I think, I don't know if the reason I'm slightly blasé is because in my head, like, I had an embryo from this batch that worked last time. I was on a certain drugs protocol, which I'm going to go back on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everything should be the same, shouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So why wouldn't it work? So maybe that's like why I'm being quite blasé.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, oh yeah, of course it's going to work. Yeah, of course.
A bit cocksure.
Well, yeah, which is really stupid because like we know so many people.
Yeah.
We know like probably dozens of people who've had one success and then no more success.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, like, of course. But, you know, if that's the way you're going into this and it's helping you, then embrace it.
It means I'm not obsessing.
Yeah.
Which is quite nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And then I guess the other thing to say to kind of prepare you all for what this series is going to be like is that it turns out I do in fact have endometriosis.
Yay.
So I don't know if this is an official diagnosis. I don't think I've had an official diagnosis, but when the consultant did the scan on me, there was an enormous endometrioma like on my ovary that was so big that you couldn't see the ovary.
Wow, that sounds big.
Yeah, and I've had some like big, like horrible, sicky periods recently.
Yeah, you've been floored a bit, haven't you?
Yeah. And so that could have an impact on what happens next, but we don't know, because the only way you can diagnose endometriosis properly is with surgery.
Yes,
and
indeed.
I'm not having that.
No, no. So, well, just see how it goes, right?
Yeah, maybe one day.
Mate, well, that's a fantastic intro.
Thanks.
Thanks for bringing us up to speed.
Yeah, that's me.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm in no way massively intimidated by interviewing. I think you were crowned Britain's best interviewer last year, but welcome to the podcast.
That's very kind of you. Thank you very much for having me. I've been a fan of both of your work for longer than you both know.
Oh, well, thank
means
you.
An awful lot.
It does.
Well, in that case, you know how we start every single podcast, and that is tell us about your journey.
Your journey, that word that you love.
Do we love it though?
No, no one does.
We just use it because it's the only one we can think of.
Terrible trip that none of us wanted to go on, and now we are veterans with many, many passport stamps. Yes, I have been on the fertility mill twice. I am still on it for the second time, and actually it was somebody in the infertility community on Instagram who corrected me recently, because I did talk about having secondary infertility, and that's not actually true, because lucky for me, I had it the first time round, and I continued to have it. So that was a wrong description by me when I wrote a recent article that perhaps we'll talk about in the Times. We started trying to conceive probably in 2015, 2016, when I was heading towards being 30, been married a couple of years, been with my husband since university. And actually, it was a bit earlier than I wanted to, but I thought, you know what, let's just see, because I'd always had a bit of a bad feeling that when I would, it wouldn't go very well, because I had suffered all my life with the most extraordinary periods, and not in a good sense. So fast forward 2.5 years, I mean, we can obviously talk about some of the emotions in that time. I wasn't getting pregnant. And I knew something was wrong, because I collapsed in Sweden on a holiday. My mother-in-law's from there.
Oh, gosh. And
I couldn't move my body. It was during another period after another month of trying. And enough was enough, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I finally, again, you know, I've sort of talked about this elsewhere and written about it, but I eventually got this diagnosis of endometriosis. And then I also have something called adenomyosis, which is in your womb as well. So that's the evil sister of endo, of which even less is known. And I had a laparoscopy to have that diagnosed, the keyhole procedure, and in that they treated it. Where finally a tiny shred of luck came in was that the endo hadn't hit my fallopian tubes or my womb in a specific way like it can.
Right.
And I was told, well, in the next 6 months, you can get pregnant. Lots of women do after this. You know, what they say is quite mild because it's keyhole surgery, but I have to say I felt like I've been hit like a bus after this. It's having that didn't happen, and so I eventually met an amazing woman in the NHS, totally the sort of first fairy, if you like, on my journey, because I'm quite a fan of IVF fairies.
And we'll talk about those later.
Yes, let's. Well, and she said, "Oh, for God's sake, Emma, just have IVF. At the very least, you will get a reprieve from your period for 6 weeks." And I said, "Where do I sign?" I thought, you know what?
If nothing else,
I'd rather get off my face on some horrendous chemicals than carry on having these periods. So that's how IVF happened the first time, and that was amazing because I got pregnant and I was able to keep the baby, and that is our four-year-old son. So my IVF journey, if you like, was actually very short, but the road to IVF was very long for me because I kept trying naturally, thinking something would give, something would happen. And then to bring you up to speed, the second part of it is that nearly 2 years ago, we started trying again. We had frozen embryos. I, having, if you like, been in the IVF casino only once, had that beginner's luck vibe.
Lucky spin.
Here we go. Was extremely fortunate that I just managed to get the embryo transfer literally as lockdown was happening, my first one, and it didn't work. And it was the worst feeling and the biggest shock, even though I know the odds. And I have then done five more rounds, and here we are. There's not a baby.
I mean, you mentioned there that you kind of went in with that beginner's luck feeling the second time round. Do you feel like if your expectations had been managed, that you wouldn't have had that kind of level of grief when it didn't work? Like if you kind of I mean, you said you knew the odds, but I feel like there's a difference between knowing the odds and knowing the odds.
Yes. I mean, I don't actually want to say that I thought it was going to work, because I never think things are going to work. I'm like that in my life, you know. But I had such a good experience of it. You know, don't get me wrong, the drugs had been awful and all that sort of stuff, but the outcome had been good. That I had faith. Yeah, I felt, and I also felt I knew it worked for me. And I knew... We had produced, very luckily, I think the figure was 10 or 11 were in the freezer. They were all the best you could have, I was told. Obviously, you don't know till they're defrosted.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, it's just something that you obviously buy into. I mean, quite literally, I'd had the first one in the NHS. Now I had to pay. I stayed. Yeah. I do get asked this sometimes, and I don't, not because I don't want to share it, but it's kind of inside baseball, but I feel this podcast is that for this world. But I stayed within the context of the NHS, and now I pay within the NHS. Yeah. I didn't go to a different clinic. I think, you know, that's also a big part of this. You know, do you stick or twist? Do you stay with the same, do you move? And I've stuck. And, you know, again, I'm happy to answer more detailed questions, but the frozen element was new. And the reason I also felt a bit better is because it's half the time, it's half the drugs.
Of course, I
was producing potentially a baby from the same group of embryos that my son was from. There was just something about it all that felt hopeful and nice until it didn't.
Well, I feel like if something's worked before, like why wouldn't it work again, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I beat myself up for feeling hopeful in any way afterwards, but that's based on, as you say, experience.
I think I wear that same armor because I had a round of IVF and it worked, and whether I go on to have another one or not, the back of my head, even though I know, and we've spoken to so many women and couples, everyone who it hasn't worked out for, but still there is a little part of me that thinks the same. It's like, well, it worked, didn't it? And it's the same batch. So obviously I'm one of the lucky ones. But it's important to hear when it doesn't go well. I think you had one of the best lines of copy I've ever read. You wrote, I'm reporting to you live from the front lines of failure, in the article that you mentioned earlier. How important has that been to you in what you're doing now, that you present what it's like to fail?
Yeah, I mean, and some people, as you well know, do not like the word fail in this context, but I feel it's very important for me, certainly, to speak plainly about it and speak as I see it and find it, and also the reality, which is you don't go in to get a bit pregnant, you go into the casino to get pregnant and to leave with a child. And if you don't do that, well, the definition of that is failure. You know, it doesn't mean I'm a failure, it just means it failed. The process failed, the situation failed. So I don't know, something happened to me in January where when I had the miscarriage, we had the miscarriage, we lost our baby, because it did eventually work, this process, the second time around, that I just sat on the rug in my living room and I thought, I need to just say it, because this has been going on coming up to 2 years. I live a life, a month on drugs, a month off drugs. I still have a very good life, a very fulfilled life, a very happy life, because, of course, I now have a child. Doing IVF with a child is completely different.
Yeah.
And I have never felt, though, that I have left the community of those trying for a baby, but I am extremely, I'm just in a completely different place, and I never wish to speak for those people, those couples, those women. But I was back in a different base camp and in a different place. And I thought, I never read those stories. And the reason we never read those stories is because people want privacy. People are traumatized. People are very scared for their jobs. And then I looked at what I did for a living and I thought, well, I present Newsnight and I present something called Woman's Hour. And I'm willing to bet, maybe I'm be proved wrong, I don't know, I'm still in the job, that if I talk about this, if I write about this, that a programme that's dedicated to equality and tells many tales of maternity discrimination and such like, that I will still have a job on the other side of it. But it felt very un-me. I don't share photos of my family on Instagram. I'm private about my private life, but I'm public about the parts of my life that I think are fair. And I also think, you know, I don't share lots of emotions on social media either, you know, or in my work. So writing the piece, it was a kind of effort moment to my situation and to try and take one for those in this, wherever they are on it, and say, wave the flag publicly. And I launched a newsletter off the back of it. And the community that's already grown up in that, I mean, you obviously have a wonderful community and I've been a member of it. I am a member of it in terms of listening to your work and having the book. But I wanted to write, I can write, I do like to write, and I had been collating without me realizing it in the notes section lots of thoughts, and I don't really have the capacity or the desire to write another book. And I just wanted to start a bit of a thing somewhere. So I it's called Trying. It's not just going to be about fertility, if I can be completely honest about that. You know, I think life is trying and there's lots of things that trying applies to, but at the moment I'm focusing on that because I've still got loads more to say. And I remember a few weeks ago I wrote this piece when I came back from holiday, and I just said, trying not to count was the headline. And there's a terrible game you play on holiday and in most scenarios, it seems. And I thought, if I admit this, I wonder if anyone will meet me halfway and say they do it too. And the game is this: it's way worse than playing, I don't know, Rummy or Bananarama on holiday, whatever it's called, I can never remember the name. It's where you look at families, you very quickly try and count how many kids they have, and then you try and calculate the age differences. And it's a completely different game to the one you play when you don't have a child, which is awful, as you know. And it's complete, I'm not saying it's a game blithely, I'm saying that sarcastically, you know, where you look at bumps, and I still look at bumps, I still look at pregnancy bumps, you know, I'm not saying I don't, of course I do. And pregnancy announcements of my friends' second and third children hit me like a bullet. even though I'm happy for them. I genuinely am. I want them to be happy because they've had miscarriages, and even if they haven't, they deserve it. They really do. They're my friends and I love them. But you play all sorts of things. And by writing, I have found your question was, you know, how important has this been? That initial article following then with a weekly, I do a newsletter every Saturday and people are subscribed, that check-in now each week is actually a beautiful thing.
Yeah. And you get so many comments on it as well, on the posts.
Yeah. And on Instagram, mainly, if I'm honest, I find Instagram's very, there's lots of negatives about that world, but it's largely been very supportive and you know, both ways. I'm corresponding with many, many women.
Yeah, it's amazing, actually, that community. You said in one of your newsletters that fertile people cannot comfort infertile people. I thought that was very succinctly put. What are your experiences of that?
Yeah, that's sort of one of those lines that I am quite a succinct person, although maybe you're not finding that on this. But
no, it's great.
I try to say what I think and get to the point, where I'm allowed to have views and opinions as a BBC broadcaster. And I also know that divides people because it's very honest, you know, and that sounds like I'm getting rid of my original mates and trying to find some new ones. On this particular topic, it's so pervasive, even it's like knotweed being infertile. And it comes into all parts of your life, even though you don't want it to. And it does invade and rupture friendships temporarily. Mm. I would argue. I have recovered, and I hope to again, where there hasn't been a fallout, but there's been me probably moving away at times from people. I just sometimes need more space. I quite literally cannot socialise sometimes on these drugs. I can do my job. I can be, I hope, a good enough a companion in my family and you know, operate. But do I then have anything left to, I don't know, be a great friend at a late dinner? No.
It's interesting. I mean, talking about trying when you already have a baby and the kind of the fact that your triggers are not to do with potentially a bump, but rather about the size of families and how many kids they have. And that's kind of what sets you off. What's it been like? Can you make that comparison? What it was like trying when you didn't have any children at all, and then how has that changed for you? Is it a different type of grief almost when you're going through this?
So something else I forgot to put in the Times article, probably because I wrote it in one fell swoop when I was quite upset, is that I'm an only child. And you know, that's also part of why I thought I'd have some issues. There's quite a lot of only children from the women in my life, who all of whom I don't believe have been diagnosed with endo. So we all had the same problems. And when I found out, it was like a light went on for my mother, who had just believed, you know, painful periods were a woman's lot if you were unlucky. I want to say that here because, weirdly, I don't have the grief that some people do because they've got lots of siblings. Yeah. Or they have one sibling even, you know, because then they look at their child and they know firsthand, especially if their sibling relationship has been a positive one, what they feel they can't give their child. Whereas I know firsthand how bloody good being an only child is and how the child is not affected. Yes, okay, there are certain moments where, you know, I can give you examples. Like I used to go to people's houses and I'd be so overwhelmed by how noisy it was. Whereas I was living with two adults. You know, we would sit and talk at the dinner table. There'd be no shouting. I mean, I'm sure there was for me. ironically, as I got older. But, you know, I only had positive experiences in my childhood of being an only child. Yeah. So I'm not saying I don't have grief, but I don't have some of the same grief.
Yeah.
I also feel because it wasn't, I now know, secondary infertility, it isn't that. I really have to say this, especially as, you know, you were just mentioning about yourself potentially going again, maybe. I always have felt since our son was born, it just might not happen again. And how bloody lucky we are. And I know I said in that piece, I've come to terms with the fact that I shouldn't just think like that and it's okay to want more and it's not greedy. But I've also managed to stay on two tracks since having him, which is we might not have had him. And it does sober you up in the worst moments. And it makes you realise that the child you have got is a full-on medical miracle. Like, you know, what a time for women to be alive and men who can't naturally have children. And yes, we are, of course, aware of women's rights in lots of areas being debated and being tweaked and legal changes in all sorts of ways. On this particular front, and obviously I've not really done much on this myself personally, but I'm very aware of, you know, concerns around prices of IVF, as in I've not done that much journalism on this, but I'm very interested in it, around abuse. Panorama did a fantastic insight into the abuse of add-ons and what clinics say works when they don't have a green light by the HFEA, the embryology authority, the regulator. But putting all that to one side, how it's different now is that I do have a child, and I will be very sad and upset, and there will be grief, but it cannot and will not and must not be at the expense of what we already have managed to create.
Is the kind of the sadness and the grief the second time around different to the first time around? And I'm including the 2.5 years you spent trying naturally as well, because I mean, for me, the grief during that time was almost the worst part.
Yeah, I mean, it's the fact that I went on Elizabeth Day's, a friend's podcast, How to Fail, and we talked about infertility. And, you know, this was sometime after I'd had our son. And the fact that I could still, because, you know, sometimes with grief and pain, you can't really remember it. The fact that I could still remember where I was for every period with Elizabeth, who has talked and written beautifully about.
Yeah, she's very eloquent, isn't she?
Her own issues with this. And you know, she doesn't yet have a child. And I always feel even more responsibility to make sure I don't overstretch or say things that are wrong, quite frankly, for me to say with a child.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you both find that hosting this now. When you set it up. You know, but the fact I could, when talking to her, really remember it all is such an insight into how deep and awful I felt for those 2 years. I mean, it was just the pits. And all my friends were having their first children. And I was going to all these birthday parties and baby showers. And even when I wasn't going to those things, I just felt hollow and sad. And I was, the other thing just to say was, I was so physically ill with my condition because I couldn't take the pill, because that's going to stop you from getting pregnant. But the pill actually used to help my endo. So I was getting more and more unwell. And so I had this extra element of physical illness, which was emotionally very hard as well.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that element of the pill helping the endo. Like, that was, and so to feel physical pain as well as like emotional pain at that time, it's just horrible.
It wasn't the best.
Not a great time.
It wasn't
the best. I mean, you've mentioned with obviously the Substack is called Trying, and you're interested in why people keep trying. How have you bottled it up? How have you kept going through so many recent rounds? Is it already having your son that keeps you going, or just, you know, what have you got there that's kept you going?
Each time you do one and it fails, you can learn something. So there's something to tweak, there's something to change. I'm not talking about add-ons, I'm talking about significant medical tweaks. So then you think, well, we don't know if that will work. Well, you know, and I never like listing my medicines or things I've done, because I don't think people should ape each other. Yeah, so I won't go into the specifics, but that's not because of privacy. I just know how vulnerable everybody is right now.
It's not helpful.
And I don't think it is. But so there's that, which is the medical chat you have. Emotionally, my friend who lives down the road, who's my ultimate IVF fairy, we met through having our boys. She didn't have fertility treatment to have her son, but she did have some concerns and some issues. But she happens to be a doctor, not in this field, but she is now absolutely going through the mill at the same time as me. Right. And if I did not have her, I mean, of course, my husband gets me, he gets me back to what I would say to like, to base, right? To where I was before, pretty much. He makes me laugh. He, you know, if I say, oh my gosh, I'm going to cry, he'll be like, wait, let me just film it. You know, there'll be really dark humor that only he can get away with, especially when you've been since university. But she is the one who I would say has got me back in the ring probably 2 to 3 times, because when I go down, she goes up and vice versa. And she gives me a pep talk, and quite literally. And I also know that there's finances at play. And even though I am in a position to be able to afford to keep going, it's not cheap. It is also a decision on that front. Even for somebody who, you know, is earning a very good salary. And I can say that not in a conceited way, but because my salary is made public by the BBC.
Today, I think.
Yeah, lovely.
congratulations.
Nice. Yeah, an additional sum of how much of it's gone on IVF. the thing I was going to say was that lots of things come into play, but what's ultimately got me back in the ring is that I'm not pregnant.
Yeah.
Like, it's so binary. You know, it's one of the... You know, it's not like an exam where you get 70%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's actually quite good, but maybe you would have liked 90, so you go back and do it again.
Uh-huh.
I'm not a bit pregnant. I'm not a tiny bit pregnant. I'm just, each round, I've not been.
And how many people have told you to stop during this time?
My mother's told me to stop.
Great.
I think she's the only one who's done it.
Oh, that's good. That sounds like you've got a very supportive environment.
Or everybody's terrified. I mean, who knows? I don't talk about it. Actually, I haven't until that piece. I hadn't really been talking about it. We weren't hiding it. I just don't have the capacity or the interest, really, in most people's opinions.
Fair enough.
Absolutely fair enough.
What about you? I mean, you've mentioned a little bit, you've touched on your casino analogy a few times, and I'd like you to kind of give me the full gamut of this analogy, because we do love one on the podcast, and I think this is a particularly strong one. So
someone else must have, I mean, not heard every episode of your lovely podcast, but someone else must have said this, have they not?
I don't think casino, no.
Okay, we've got my labored train one, but I think the casino one's better.
I missed that one.
Everyone's so bored of me saying this by now. It's, you're on, when you're trying for a baby, you're kind of stuck on a train. There's some people at like Single and Loving It Junction behind you, and there's people in front of you who are at like Parent Station. But you're kind of stuck, and there's nobody telling you when the train is going to move, and you haven't got any signal on your phone, and you can't phone anyone and tell them what's happening. And it's just really frustrating.
Yeah, that's good. I like that. Mine's more kind of Vegas with difficult croupiers and
more glamorous,
difficult chips. I just feel it is a big casino, and some of the people you'll meet in there are great if you're lucky and you get a good team around you, and some of the people are not so great. And then even with the great people, you can get a terrible hand, and nobody tells you to cash out, really. You can just keep on going. I mean, not endlessly. And of course, there will be, again, I'm saying this glibly, I just want to signpost that it's been the worst experience. But, you know, some people are told to cash out because there is no point to them pursuing this particular route. Then they maybe look at donor eggs or donor sperm. Maybe they then look at other options completely. I'm really not saying that glibly, but in a lot of scenarios in IVF, this is why you hear the stories. They're not stories, they're lives of people going 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 plus times.
Yeah. Have you got a red line? And this is a very intrusive question. Feel free to not answer it. But I'm about to go into my first go at a second. And I know that my red line is when I run out of embryos.
Yes. Well, good luck, my friend.
Thank you.
May all the luck be with you to keep going with the casino. We had a breakthrough because, and I know I'm breaking my rule here by saying something specific medically, but I feel I can't answer your question without saying it.
Mm-hmm.
when we got pregnant with the baby we sadly lost in January, we went to Fresh because it was to try and do what we had done originally. Okay. And if that hadn't have worked, that could have been it, because it wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually can only bang my head against a brick wall only so many times and be able to recover very well. Yeah. So if we hadn't had some movement, some actual positivity, I'd be out by now. There was a bit of a red line, and we didn't hit it in the end. We really thought we had hit it. So what's the new red line? I await, if I'm completely honest. I feel like I'll sort of know.
Okay.
And I am a decisive person. I make the decisions we make them together, but ultimately it is the woman who has to do this.
It is.
Herself, and try and be a mother if they are very fortunate enough to be so, be a friend, be an employee.
Mm.
We have to take all of that into account.
Yeah. Right. How are you finding, we touched on earlier what it's like to go through this again with a son, but how are you logistically, are you finding that challenging?
Oh, yes. Go to the hospital when I'm at the height of whichever, you know, the sort of the most interactive bit, if we call it that. I go at 5:45 in the morning before the women's at a news meeting.
Oh my gosh.
And that's because my doctor works really early hours, which we didn't know. So we found this.
That's incredible.
So that's good, isn't it? That's a nice way.
That's amazing.
And I fit in some stuff, believe it or not, before work. And then I fit it in after work. That's and then mad. I fit it in at the weekends, in terms of it's very logistically heavy. And you know, I do have such a weird job that, you know where I am 10 to 11 in the morning, it's live. I'm in the BBC. So, you know, if anybody, as they had quite, you know, understandably at the beginning of these latest rounds, said to me, oh, we'd like to do your embryo transfer at 10:35. I'm like, well, I'll be on air then. So
we could broadcast it live, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I've thought about that.
Great, yeah, absolute content idea.
But, you know, I do have the flex, but it's really limited because I don't do drop-offs in the morning for school. I do the pickups.
Uh-huh.
And I need to be back for 3 o'clock, if not earlier. So the windows are very small, but I am extremely fortunate that I also have quite unorthodox hours in that way.
Yeah, yeah. Can we kind of talk about your career? Because, you know, you've written about, 5 a.m. appointments. I think you presented an award after an egg collection. Is that right?
Yeah, I actually received an award.
Received an award. Collection,
which was even slightly worse because you've made a speech. and I came off stage and said to my producer, is that all right? And she said, yeah, that was great. That was really nice. I said, what did I say? I think, you know, adrenaline was pumping and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
I wasn't quite aware of it. But, it wasn't great timing. And yet at the same time, if there's like personality types to IVFers, so not my usual personality, but the personality I assume in my IVF, should we try for that?
Uh-huh.
Is I don't live and I don't abstain from my life as much as I can possibly help it. I eat what I want. I drink what I want, not once the embryo is put in. I don't do acupuncture. I don't do any complementary medicine, holistic medicine. Mm-hmm. I don't do any of that. I did all that in the 2 years leading up to the first round and didn't get me pregnant. That's fine. Other people do whatever they need. You know, that's no judgment. But part of me being me is going on the election trail with that embryo having just been transferred, having been told to take it easy. And I looked at the nurse and said, okay. And I remember talking to my stomach like a crazy lady.
Don't worry.
Hey, I don't know who you are. Hope you're going to stick about, but mummy's going on the election trail. And if you want to be with me, this is how the life is. And listen, I just think if the embryo and you are going to happen, they're going to happen.
Yeah.
And that's how I live. So, yes, I'd only have my eggs taken out. Nothing had been put in, you know, and I'm...
Yeah, but general anaesthetic is...
Yeah, that wasn't great. Yeah. That wasn't great. I did feel really shaky. I don't want to make out I'm some kind of she-woman. But I really worked hard in my job over the last year. And we'd worked hard as a team. And I was up for best speech presenter. And I didn't know what would happen with it. But I really wanted to go. And because of COVID, we haven't had in-person things for ages, yeah, like those awards. And I got a cab to town, stumbled into the venue, had a photo, sat in my seat and didn't move with a gin. And 6 awards in, it was our category and we won.
I mean,
it's amazing stuff. My IVF character is, I'm doing IVF. I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to become freelance. I'm going to lie on the couch for large periods of the day and I'm going to become a Zen princess without anything potentially stressing me out. There's obviously two sides, you know, there's two ways you can go down this, but what, I mean, there's going to be lots of people listening to this that are like, how, you know, should they quit their jobs? You know, what's your advice to people who are wondering whether they can keep going with their career during all of this?
Listen, I make a lot of jokes, which I hope is becoming clear to your audience, as in that humour and sort of glibness is part of my MO and coping strategy generally. I know that my job is stressful, don't get me wrong, it's live. I often do big interviews, political interviews especially as well, which require lots of prep. I stay up late, I read, you know, I'm not doing my job down. But at the end of the day, I get to sit down, which is also really helpful for endo. Really, really helpful for a chronic pain condition. And it's really helpful for when an embryo sadly has left me and I'm in the pain for that next period after a failed transfer for me is unholy, right? And I really am so ill. I find work medicine, but I can sit down. And it occupies my entire brain for the 4 or 5 hours of that day. And I need it. I need it and I enjoy it generally anyway, but I really feel it helps, not hinders. Yeah. If you have a job where you are on your feet, maybe you're a police officer, maybe you're a teacher, hairdresser, all sorts of jobs, you're in the military, I cannot speak to the conditions that you find yourself in. And I certainly, if you're a lawyer, I mean, I cannot speak to the levels of stress and whether you are able to push back and manage any of them. I don't know that. But what I do know is some of the most successful people, I don't mean in traditional senses per se, but, you know, good at their job, doing well, going in the right direction, have had to take some time off work.
Right.
And I know that's also not possible financially a lot of the time. And there's the quip, you know, there's the burn. You're trying to pay for IVF as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't know in people's individual situations. So the advice is hard to give, but what I would say is try to reduce in areas where you can, if you feel it's taking too much from you.
I think there's a lot to be said for that. I think also if you enjoy your job, if it's your happy place, and that's so much. I mean, my last round, I took time off my job because I just didn't really like my job and it made me feel stressed.
Yes.
Whereas now I really like my job and I probably won't take any time off.
Well, that's nice.
It is. It's great. Just from a practical point of view, talking about endo, how do you cope with presenting Woman's Hour while you're in a ridiculous amount of pain? Like, how do you do that? and I speak from a point of view as someone who's just been diagnosed.
Oh. Gosh.
Yeah.
Gosh. Well, to another club you didn't want to be at. How do I cope? Well, I have a hot water bottle sometimes when I'm broadcasting, which never quite managed to make work on telly on Newsnight. I drink a lot of hot drinks and I take not very many actually because I don't do much, but I do take some painkillers.
Right.
And I breathe. I do some properly good breathing beforehand. And then I just try and fight my way through the fog that can come into your mind when you are in pain. So, you know, the fog of IVF is not similar to, it's quite different, but I know the two types of fog, and I'm quite, you know, your brain is a muscle and you can train it.
Right.
Again, there are some women with endo that could not do this. I'm at stage 2 of 4, or I was, I don't know what my latest part is. I was sort of halfway to the worst. But that's still only halfway, if you see what I mean. So some women cannot work at all with this condition, but I am able to just about do it. But now what I don't do, which is a change, and it's not just because I joined Women's Eye, I did it at 5 Live, and often, you know, working just because of how the rotor felt. Some days, you know, whole teams of lots of men, some days it was lots of women. But, you know, I didn't just do this because I went to a so-called women's program. I don't hide it as much anymore. So I used to put a very brave face on. Now, if I'm in pain, you can see it on my face. Not when I'm on air. That's a performance. Get the lippy on. Make people feel good on air. But in the run-up to it, my team will know if it's an endo day because I've got a pained expression on my face and it's extra energy to get rid of it.
Emma, we kind of said before that we were going to talk about IVF fairies. I love this concept. I feel like I've got IVF fairies without realising.
Mm.
Tell me what they are and where you find them.
Where are they? They're real. my first experience of this, and the name, if you like, was given to me by the random woman I met who became mine. I was doing, I don't spend my life at awards dues, but I was hosting awards do.
Your life sounds very glam.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's not right now. But anyway, and I, you know, on stage, you work with someone to hand out the awards. This woman was there. She was lovely. And I was doing my first ever injection. And I was kind of excited because after 2 years of nothing, I was actually going to try and take some steps to get pregnant that was different than just trying to have sex. So I was kind of pumped for the needle, literally. And I just wanted to tell someone. It was kind of this crazy thing. So I just told next to me. It turns out she'd had IVF to have her 2 children. What are the odds? I don't know. But it was quite a special moment. And we exchanged numbers at the end of the meal. She gave me a couple of tips about putting my needle in, which was really helpful. And she said, I'll be your IVF fairy. I said, what on earth is that? She said, I'll just be this person who you can check in with anytime you want, ask any questions. And, you know, if you don't want to bother your doctor or you can't get hold of them, just ask me. Like, not medical, but, you know, a bit of support. And it was a really, you know, no strings attached, lovely relationship. And now I do it for a few women. One woman in particular I was thinking of the other day, she really didn't want to share that much, but I've just pushed myself onto her, which is nice. She did consent, don't worry. But I just sort of said, I think you're going to need this. And she has now started to tell me a few things.
That's great.
I think we call it IVF BFFs, don't we? It's our version.
So, like, one last question before we go. And I really liked this. In your newsletter the other day, you were talking about an older friend advised you to play a drinking game every time you heard something that made you feel sad about IVF. Can we just hear the rules of the drinking game?
Yeah, please. How does one play this?
I was going on a really difficult weekend because everybody had lots of children that they'd had naturally and easily. Oh. And actually their biggest complaint in life was their children. And that's not a great situation.
No, that's not ideal.
I can be the queen of barbed remarks, or certainly storm all up for later. Because I don't ever really do it to the people because it's not their fault.
No.
And they're people I often care about. So how does one deal with it? And my friend, who is a lot older, said to me, well, we've got to devise a strategy for this. So I said, well, what's the strategy? And she said, well, what could you reward yourself with each time you have a horrible thought about someone or what they've just said? And I sort of, we talked about chocolate, we talked about cake, and then I just said, well, I love whiskey. And she said, right, this is going to be a really good weekend because a very small dribble of whiskey for a very not that bad a thought, and a very large thing of whiskey if they say something horrific where you think it's so insensitive. So yeah, I mean, I was pretty smashed.
how compass mentis were you at the end of it?
The first night was actually all right, not much went down, as in I had some wine anyway. But yeah, the second night the Lefroy got absolutely raw.
Brilliant. Amazing.
It's not a drinking game with many rules. It's highly unsophisticated. So I'm sorry to it's basically drink when you feel bad.
It's nice. It's your little secret though, isn't it? That's what makes it nice. You're like, yeah. Well, Emma, thank you so much for sharing the drinking game and of course your story with us.
No, thank you. And thank you for setting this up. It's been a long time now, but
It's been great. Just before you go, just tell us like where we can sign up for the newsletter.
Oh yes, well, I think if you are interested in what I have had to say, you can sign up. If you just look up Emma Barnett Trying on Substack's a website you can just easily find, where lots of newsletters are, lots of really brilliant ones, and you can put your email address. There's a box that comes up, and then you get a weekly email from me every Saturday.
Awesome. Well, what a joy. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Now it's time for
IVF.
What the F?
What the F?
What the F?
It's back. Been a while since we've done that.
I've missed our harmonies.
I know, so beautiful. I mean, cringe. I can't help it though now, it just kind of happens.
No, yeah, absolutely.
I can't stop it even if I want to.
What was I gonna say? So we're talking again. Yeah, this has like become quite handy.
It's a themed episode that we didn't mean to do.
Yeah, we're talking about when you're really arrogant about conceiving a second. No, we're not. We're talking about this weird myth that people go on about, which is if you've had a baby via IVF, people seem to think that you'll conceive naturally next time.
Mm-hmm. Everyone likes to say it, don't they? Pretty much everyone, I think.
Yeah.
Next one. Watch out.
Yeah, I think I'm quite lucky because I just go, no, because I don't have any fallopian tubes.
Yes, not actually medically possible, friend. Yeah. Thank you.
Whereas you don't have that luxury, do you?
I don't. And I had sex recently. I'm not using contraception. Who knows what's going to happen, guys? Watch this space.
I like the way you're like, I had sex recently.
I know. It's plus big news.
What's your time scale?
It's big news around here. another reason you know exactly how old I am. Yeah.
Well, good luck with that one.
Thanks. I'll let you know if there's any news. But I suppose for those of you who don't have a complete diagnosis that you will never get pregnant naturally, you know, for the unexplained infertilities amongst us, this is hopefully going to be useful for you.
Yeah.
As a retort to everyone that likes to say that.
Take it away, Prof. Tim.
So we do see this, but I think it is just chance. Most people who have fertility problems don't have a 0% chance of getting pregnant, even for couples where the sperm quality is low or there's a degree of tubal damage, for example. There's often a monthly chance of getting pregnant. It might only be 1, 2 or 3%, but there is a chance. And so we do sometimes see that people get pregnant straight after or straight before, for instance, their first IVF cycle. Similarly, there'll be many people who have no problems conceiving their first child and then for some reason don't get pregnant when trying for their second child and so end up looking at IVF then. And also, as per this question, we also see that some people have IVF for their first child and then, because they are not getting pregnant naturally, and then get pregnant straight away for their second child. And I honestly don't think there's any science behind that at all. I really think it is just an example that for most people, there is a monthly chance it can happen whenever.
This is the end of this episode. There are more in the series, guys. They're going to come at you like hot slices of audio deliciousness.
Thanks for that.
Do you think, maybe I'm begging us up way too much.
No,
but.
No, I like it. Although I don't feel like audio deliciousness right now because I feel just bummed
off. No, you're too COVID-y.
Yes.
So I'm trying to overcompensate.
hey, first of all, the last couple of series we've forgotten to thank people at the end.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So just to thank Emma, obviously.
Thanks to Emma Barnett, who's a ledge.
Thanks, Professor Tim.
Also a ledge.
And thanks, Acast, for hosting.
Thanks, Acast.
Thanks to you, Gabriella.
Thank you. I was waiting. Yeah. Thanks to you, Emma, for recording from the depths of COVID sickness.
So bad. And thanks to my clinic for giving me weird content.
Yes.
But mainly, who are we speaking to next week?
We're speaking to someone who I fangirled the hell out of. She may be
a master of design.
A master of interior design, you say? Yes, obviously, we're talking about, if you've watched Interior Design Masters, you will know Amy Davies. And she let it be known during the series that one of the reasons that she applied to the programme was because of her struggles with infertility. So, yeah, we got her on.
We got her on. I mean, the minute she said that and that episode came out, we got many, many messages from a lot of you guys asking us to get her on. So we complied, didn't we?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And she is lovely. I'm very glad we did.
Yeah, she's an absolute peach. So we will see you next week with that.
See you next Tuesday.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.